with thanks to Jet Couriers. Brian Waldron is in the studio with me. Hello, Wally.
Kev, good to see
you.
How
are you?
I'm fascinated by our off-air conversation about the media and the AFL. I'll bring that up a bit later, actually. nothing that I shouldn't be saying, but I just, anyway, we'll talk about it in a minute. How's life?
Good
to see you. Now, listen, what do we do? We're playing at Merrimack, are we?
Yes.
We're playing all over the place.
Well, actually, there's some good ones, I reckon. Yeah. The Witten Oval, obviously, in the first week, the Bulldogs will take on Melbourne. That's
terrific,
good.
Yep.
Casey Fields gets a game in the second week, Melbourne and Carlton at Casey Fields at Cranbourne. Back to Arden Street, which we just heard mentioned they've got to do a bit of work on. But there's actually a game at Arden Street tonight. The Werribee Footy Club are playing a scratch match there tonight from 6 o'clock.
Scratch match? Now?
Yeah. Well, that's what our coach likes to call them. Pre-season intra-club match. We've got 60 blokes on the...
You're playing a pre-season game in December.
A pre-season practice match in December.
It's world's gone mad.
Avant-garde,
yep.
It is.
Yep.
So Arden Street, North Melbourne will play Hawthorn there in the second week on a Sunday afternoon. Carlton have got a game back at Icon Park against the Saints in week three. We play at Lavington. St Kilda will play a home game against the Swans at Lavington.
It's nice up there.
That's a really good spot. That's a great little facility they've got up. Oh, not little, it's massive.
Yeah, it's
one.
Good setup, yep.
Yeah, so Etihad Stadium. So,
And Merrimack, did you say?
Yes, I did mention Merrimack.
So is that where Labrador play, I wonder? I don't know.
Can't say I've ever heard of Merrimack until I read it on the...
Well, the more they play up there, the better for the Gold Coast Suns, I think. So hopefully they've got a couple up there. Couple of big days in footy. Couple of really good story, obviously, with the one you spoke about this morning with Ruffhead.
Ruffy, yeah.
And it's interesting, isn't it? We talk about... I mean, I remember being in here and the mood was very down about Jared Ruffhead. Very down across the industry about that. This was really, really dark.
There's some footballers that you just like, and he's
one
of them.
Yeah, but even the stories about the depths of his issues were pretty severe. None of us ever knew, but it was sort of the rumour was around, oh, this is no good. Well, 12 months on, I mean, it's magnificent, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And the question I had asked raised last night to me was, should he be captain of the club? How would he go? Because they've let senior players go, and if Luke Hodges is looking to step down, what sort of message would it be if Jared Ruffhead, having 12 months out of the game, became captain of that club? And when you look at the players they have, he's sort of the next in line. So it would be interesting to see what Hawthorn supporters think, that if Luke Hodge is going to step aside, who is the heir apparent? And provided everything's as it is, there ain't much better.
I'd agree with all that.
There's not much better than Jared
Ruffhead.
And probably,
had he not had the health issues... Maybe that's a conversation that wouldn't be even happen because it would already be done.
Oh, I think we forget he's a super player, isn't he? I mean, to be his size, to go on ball, to have the tank that he has and also kick goals. I mean, and I had him at a function at our footy club last year with Gibson, and they were fantastic to listen to. And he's very grounded. And I think the other thing that probably came out of the discussion, and we lose sight of this because it's in Victoria, it's our hobby footy. He said footy's nothing. You know, it's not footy's just footy, and he's back doing what he loved doing, which is his hobby, really, footy. It's also just happens to be how he earns an income. But in the scheme of things, playing a game of footy is nothing compared to what he faced, which is fantastic to see. And I'd love to think he could become an ambassador for those type of things on the understanding that everything's great as it is. So fantastic story and great for our game, the game of Melbourne's people, and it's great for him and obviously Hawthorn Footy Club, isn't it?
Yeah, and that is an interesting point. Would Hawthorn supporters jump on and let all footy supporters 9429 1116 let us know? Do you think he should be made captain? I don't think he'd want to be made captain.
Yeah,
I think he'd probably rather slip in and just quietly go about his business and get back to playing if that's what happens. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. But if that is what happens, he'd just quietly jump in and do what he does. I keep asking the same question. Unless Hodge wants to step down, for me, he's the obvious Hawthorn captain. Mm. But why would he want to step down?
Oh, no, look, I mean, there's a transition through the...
Don't you want to be captain?
Well, you're doing, but Mitchell stood aside after a certain period of time to give it to Hodge because he felt it was the right thing to do. I don't know how you work it.
But
I mean,
when there's no one there, when there isn't an obvious person bobbing up, like there was with in Hodge's case.
Yeah, there was, yeah.
There was there. When there isn't anyone bobbing up and you're the person for the job, you should...
Well, it's
interesting
because Riewoldt's been captain of St Kilda for years and there's never been an obvious next in line once Goddard left. He appeared to be the most likely, but he left and then Del Sano left as well. And And the most likely one hadn't put their hand up. And then you look at them this year and you sort of go, it makes sense because Geary, for example, and Weller, who seem to be the next two coming through, have become very good players. But it took them a long time to become good players. Yeah. What you do now with Rufford is you've got a very good player, haven't you? So whether or not they would, it's interesting. I suppose we'll see what people say.
Yeah, 9429 1116 is the number, or 0433 98 1116. Tanks of Footscray said, I doubt very much Ruffy would want the captaincy. Just being out there will be enough for him and for all of us. Here. Richard's in Eltham. Hi, Richard.
Yeah, g'day, guys. I'm enjoying the chat. I think, you know, just let Ruffy concentrate on playing footy first and foremost. I mean, we're not sure whether he'll be back for round one. So I think, you know, say if he comes back, you know, round eight or something like that, I mean, you can't necessarily make him captain. And if you listen to his interviews, his fitness is a little bit down just yet because he can't really push himself. So I think there's a couple of guys there, perhaps Isaac Smith or Liam Shields, who could both be very good captains.
Liam Shields seems to be a very well-regarded player, doesn't he? And plays in the middle of the park, which also makes a difference sometimes to those people that want to pick someone that seems to have a major role. And with the players going, such as Lewis going, certainly Shields steps up and becomes an important player for him, doesn't he?
Already off the SMS, Shields' name is coming through there. Don't know whether you have to worry about whether he's actually ready to go for round one, if that's the criteria. I mean, have a look at, if you look at the reverse with the Bulldogs, Robbie Murphy played, what, three games, whatever it was in the end, and then wasn't on the park for the rest of the year, but clearly he was the leader of the club.
I tell you what, the bloke that replaced Robert Murphy, in hindsight, we'll talk about the Dogs in a minute, because there's been a fascinating rejig at Hawthorn at the Western Bulldogs. But Easton Wood, the more I read and more I saw at the end of the...
Impressive man, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's a very impressive young man.
Yeah, you can
man.
Pluck him sometimes. Sometimes you pluck him and sometimes you're lucky. You know what I mean? And I don't think anyone knows how they really turn out. I mean, you can have great leaders at school and school captains, and they can go sour and they can go off. You can have these, you know, like Hodgie. I remember meeting Hodgie when he was aroused about from down Colacway. Was he? Where was he? He was down the bush.
Yeah, he was from the bush.
Because he played at Geelong Falcons. He's one of those teams. Came and met St Kilda that year of the famous draft. I remember meeting him thinking, he's got a bit of scallywag in him, this boy. And you know what he has? He has got some scallywag. But as Andrew Plimpton said to me, Brian, when I started at St Kilda, he said, Brian, you don't want a team of monks. You do not want a team of monks because... You need some variety and you need some spice in amongst them. And that's what Hodgie's got as a leader. He's got a bit of variety and a bit of spice.
Is that what we're getting to? We're going to have a team of monks?
No, we don't want those.
Don't reckon that's going to happen?
No, we need a bit of... Well, we never... Certainly at St Kilda in my day, we didn't have any monks, I can tell you that. We had some roustabouts in those days. And Easton Wood, though, I think looks to be, apart from the way he presents, and his level of education, which is important, he's got great qualities. And the way he wrote a couple of pieces I read... after the finals were quite fascinating. And look, a lot of those young boys that they've drafted, the Bulldogs have got a really interesting mix, haven't they? They've got some country kids, they've got some private school kids.
Yes.
They've got some blokes like Dixon who have battled and battled to get there, haven't they?
Yeah, it's a really interesting mix. And I think this year's crew, which I'm doing a thing with tomorrow night for the club, is an interesting bunch of young men again coming into the club.
And they've got some veterans as well mixed in there. The fascinating thing the Bulldogs have done, which... just might throw everything out the door in relation to when clubs go and look at who they recruit to do roles, is he's basically turned their whole coaching staff on their head, and he's taken a 6'6" bloke who's been looking after... What's King been looking after?
Stoppages. Was he stoppages?
Stephen King has gone from... He will relinquish his midfield coach responsibilities and become the defensive coach. I doubt Stephen King ever played a game in the back line except when he was probably under 12.
But isn't that the way the game's changing?
Well, that's a really interesting point. I mean, when we look at what we need to be line coaches, as they call them, or specific area coaches, he's basically saying, I need to give these people more experience in different areas, probably to make them more rounded for the good of the club. So he's going, just because Joel Corey played 300 games in the back line, he's not going to play with the...
He's the new midfield
coach.
Daniel G and Syracuse is now the stoppage coach.
Well, wasn't he the one that they said... was the man that started that whole new brand of footy that they did? The quick movement?
Yeah, I think he was.
So he hasn't tweaked that one too much. He hasn't moved him into ruck coach, but it's fascinating what he's done, and I'd like to talk to Bevo. Hopefully we can get him online or someone can talk to him and say, explain what this is about, because historically you get a ruckman to look after ruckman. don't you? You get a good defender to look after the back line, and you get Barry Hall to go and look after the forwards.
Well, Geelong have just signed this week Brad Johnson to come down and mentor their forwards.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I don't know if it still is a necessity that you need to have the necessary skills in that position or in that area.
If you're one
of
those assistant coaches, though, and you know, someone like a Daniel G in Syracuse, who clearly has some aspirations to coach his own team at some stage, I would imagine, at the highest level, that's good for him.
Oh, fantastic.
Good for his grounding. And you can't tell me that if you're not the stoppage coach or the forward coach, that you're not looking at what's going on in other areas of the game as well. When the game's going on and in your reviews and things, you're pointing things out to the other coaches.
It's interesting, Luke Beveridge. I know Fox Footy, I was talking to the president at St. Bede yesterday, and Fox had been down to St. Bede's doing St. Bede's Mentone, where he started his coaching career, doing sort of a where it all began on Luke Beveridge. And I wasn't totally aware, but he's still on the committee down there. He's still in an advisory role with the old boys. We've come back up to A grade this year in the AMO. So,
I spoke to someone who coached two of this bloke's sons.
Yeah,
and this was before Luke was appointed at the Doggies, and before his name was even brought up at the Doggies. Yeah. And we were talking about something totally separate, and he said, "Oh, my two boys play at St. Bede's under Luke Beveridge, and I'm telling you now, this bloke is going to be a star AFL coach at some stage." I'm like, okay, fine. And it wasn't until he got appointed at the Doggies that I thought about that, and then what he's done in that short amount of time that he's been at the Bulldogs is quite extraordinary. But St. Bede's obviously a very pivotal part of his development in the coaching.
And Mel Garside, who's the president at St. Bede's, I was in my discussion with him, they've now appointed a whole new coaching staff for their venture back into A grade. They're all boys that played under Luke Beveridge.
Are they really?
Together, yeah.
Well, there's a couple of Luke's boys. I think one might be the Bulldogs women's coach, and I think there's maybe two from his and Beats days.
So it was Clarko, now it's him, and it was Malthouse, and there'd be Matthews and all these. So it appears to be the next generation of people will be people that have come through the Luke Beveridge School of Learning.
26 past 11 here at 11:16 SEN, Melbourne's home of sport. And Kevin Hillier here till midday with Brian Waldron, who's with us, of course, thanks to Jet Couriers.
Now, a fascinating story appeared online after the weekend of American football.
Yeah.
The best player in the game last year was Cam Newton, who shot the lights out until the last day of the year. And in the game on the weekend, he was benched before the game.
Right. For some terrible, horrible indiscretion?
Terrible, horrible indiscretion, whereby he broke the dress code violation of the team because he didn't wear his tie on the plane.
Surely he had no pants on.
Yeah, no, he did wear his tie on the plane. So as a result of that, he was stood down from the first play of the game, which the backup quarterback took and duly threw the ball to the opposition, who scored a touchdown.
Right.
It led to the start of the 40-7 rod.
Good move by the coach.
Well, it's interesting because this is why I raise the issue. Coach Rubio said that no one gets treated differently. If it was the best player in the comp or the last player on the roster, if you don't wear your tie on the team playing, you ain't playing.
Now, the bloke who normally sits in this chair on this side with no hair and a 400-game league career behind him is adamant that you get treated according to your pecking order, in AFL footy anyway, your pecking order on the food chain.
Mm.
So if you're the best player in the club, and you don't wear the team tie, you'll get a little slap on the wrist and be told you're a naughty boy.
Yeah.
If you're the 44th player on the list and you don't wear the team tie, you'll probably get 12 months, fine 10 grand, and have to wash the boss's car for the next 3 years.
Well, I also think it's relevant to when it occurs, because at the moment the Carolina Panthers have gone from being one of the best teams to being one of the worst. So this season's basically busted anyway. So I think the coach is making a statement to the rest of the group that there's no exception. I wonder, had they been 8-1 or 7-2, whatever it was, would they have benched him if it was an important game? We get back to the Jared Impey story, which is beyond, it beggars belief to me that Jared Impey can do what he did the other night and cop a one-game suspension and a $5,000 fine. Now, the $5,000 fine, I would say, is all they can fine. And I've been adamant that we need to use the almighty dollar to punish our athletes. If you find
isn't that set by the players?
It is, which is a joke. Yeah, it's an absolute joke, because it diminishes the powers of the clubs to actually have any authority over the players. Had we had a situation last year when Dustin Martin was out and he he found trouble. Had someone been able to grab him on the shoulder and said, mate, you do realise if this is going to happen, this could cost you a quarter of your salary this year? Or Jared Impey, before he jumped in the car, somebody had reminded him, or he reminded himself, this might cost me a lot of money. I don't reckon they do it.
Yep. I reckon percentage rather than...
Absolutely. That point of view, I think it's really interesting that we've got that situation. You've also got the situation, though, of course, whereby you have to let the law determine the definitive punishment for Jared Impey. So,
well, see, we had someone yesterday say that the club shouldn't do anything because he's going to be charged, so let that be his punishment, and the club buy out of it.
Well, no, you can't, because he's damaging the brand of the club. And when he signs on to play, he signs on the understanding that he will act in a manner that is respectful to the values of the club. So the other thing about Impey, which is quite clear, he hasn't denied it.
Oh,
he's
no.
clearly put his hand up and said that there's an error of his behaviour. So I'm not too sure what else they can do.
Another player in the car with him at the time has also been...
Well, yeah, that's right. And a number of other players who were sitting around probably having a few drinks with him, which is okay too. He determined to get in the car. His mate was the one also that was... But he might have told him he was all right. And maybe he wasn't as bad as what it looks like he was. But when you look at the damage, it didn't look great.
No,
it didn't look great. So I'm interested in your comments and anyone else's comments on what we should be doing to these players. Should we be fining them? And do we treat players differently?
I think the fine's a joke, and I think so. I can't remember who it was who said, the fining of elite sportsmen is farcical because it doesn't affect them at all.
No,
it
has unless no effect on them. Unless it's extremes, which I think
it should be. If it was 25% or 10% or whatever,
yeah,
it would actually have an impact. Greg's in Bentley. G'day, Greg.
G'day, mate. How are you?
Good, thank you.
The Players Association said they want a cut of the cake of the AFL. But what happens if a player commits an indiscretion and causes the club to lose, say, a $3 million sponsorship? That won't affect the AFL income, but it would affect the players and the club's potential to pay their players. What would they be prepared to take a cut if that occurs?
Yeah, it's a really good point when you talk about the impact it has on the brand and the sponsorship of the club. I always found the most powerful method of making the players aware of their error of their ways was that we would actually put them in front of a number of sponsors. And there was a couple at St Kilda in particular who were prepared to, as CEOs of the business, to look them in the eye and say, do you understand what you're doing to our brand and reputation here? How dare you? And that was as powerful as anything.
Wow.
That was a really powerful message. And I wonder if Port Adelaide have done that with Impey and said to him, listen, mate, you need to come and meet the boss of whoever our major sponsor is and let him explain your actions to him. Because, look, people make mistakes. Let's not overplay what took place. And fortuitously, no one was injured. But it does look like just a slap on the wrist. Now, there might be extenuating circumstances. Somebody said there'd been a death in the family.
Yeah, his dad died.
Yeah, which is very sad.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know if that excused the behaviour. Does it explain the behaviour? Possibly.
My understanding is that it was a team barbecue at Monfrey's house. Was that right? To meet the new blokes.
Right.
Just to get together and meet the new blokes, and they were having a couple of beers and a barbecue, and that's what it was. And it happened at 7 o'clock at night or whatever. Yeah. So it wasn't a massive drinking session, and they were all on the terps and stuff. How the passing of his dad impacted him, I don't know that.
Certainly I heard some other journalists last night scathing on Port Adelaide for their lack of punishment for him, but I think they're limiting what they can possibly do.
Well, the $5,000's the limit they can do monetarily.
Yeah.
And they've suspended him for selection for the first game, if you're a player, missing games is what hurts.
But I certainly think the impact on the brand of the club and the sponsors associated with the club is something that you can utilise to make players aware. Having said that, some players wouldn't give a rat's toss, mate.
About what it does to the sponsors?
No, they go in one ear and out the other. That's society, isn't it, for some? You know,
well,
it doesn't, wouldn't matter
to them. You don't want a team of monks.
Yeah, that's right.
Dez is in Shepparton. Hi, Dez.
Hello, how you going?
Good, thank you.
Good, Dez.
Disregard young Jarman, I think sometimes you can look at it in extenuating circumstance because, unfortunately, with his father was only 43 years old, and it was actually his deterioration was very quick. It was only a matter of a few weeks from diagnosis to his death.
Okay.
And he's had an impeccable record ever since he's left home and moved to Adelaide. And I think, sometimes with the Koori culture as well, you know, family is the ultimate, you know, respect and love and affection and everything that goes back is back to the family. And I think being a long way from home, and you know, you're a 21-year-old boy, he's not fully grown up yet, really mature-wise. So, you know, he's made a mistake, but I think that, you know, sometimes it's a fair bit of stones and that thrown in glass houses. So, I understand you've got to make a statement about it. But
yeah, I think that's the thing, Des. That was our point right from the start when we spoke about Cam Newton getting rubbed out for the start of a game for not wearing the tie. We've got a young bloke here that's made a bad call and a bad judgment. And by the way, others around him, I would think from a club point of view, would be seem to be looked upon in pretty ordinary, with pretty ordinary opinions from the senior management of the club to say, how did you let this bloke do what he did?
Yeah.
It probably begs the question, though, if Jarman Impey's been going through difficult times, what environment should he have been in anyway? Because we need to keep that in perspective too. He's not the first young man who's lost his father that has made a mistake. A lot of people lose their father and life goes on, sad, but these things don't happen. So I think there is obviously some grace given to the fact that that's happened to him. It still has to be taken on face value that he jumped in a car obviously under the influence and hit five other cars.
Yeah.
So it's one of those ones that, you know, it's not easy to, it's all opinions, but at the end of the day, that's what we're here to do, give opinions on it. It just seems to be the way it's been managed is interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly is. Good on you, Des. Thanks for your call. Appreciate that. The Jarman Impey thing has certainly polarised people. Perhaps lose some percentage of their salary if suspended, says Pete. Being 21 doesn't excuse you for driving and crashing into cars. Someone else has suggested off the SMS that his father passing away is no excuse for his behaviour. It's a polarising...
There's no right answer. Yeah, it is a polarising issue.
It's a polarising thing. Now, yeah. I've got something fortunately, reading this out rather than what a lot of people would think would be being read out, but fallen AFL star Ben Cousins has been reportedly arrested again. He was allegedly picked up by the police in Canning Vale in Western Australia on Tuesday night for breaching a violence restraining order. He's expected to appear in court later on Wednesday. They are saying that if the 38-year-old man in custody is Cousins, as has been reported, it would represent yet another low in his tragic tale.
Yeah, just, it is a tragic tale.
And
clearly, the restraining order is there for the protection of his
former partner and his children.
And very sad. Very sad.
Now you mentioned the Cam Newton situation.
Yes. Yeah,
so
we got the good man online.
We thought
online.
We'd get the man online who knows all about that was sitting in that chair yesterday that you're in. Steve Salisbury is on the line. Hello, now Steve, have you got the SEN tie on?
No, I've gone open collar again.
Right.
I'm suited up. I'm looking really nice. But again, when it's going to be any time you're driving around all day and you got to see different people, if it's above 20 degrees, I don't think you should wear a tie.
No.
Well, tell me about the Cam, mate. The Cam Newton one. I went through that before. It's a fascinating little bit of news, isn't it? That they would leave him out of the starting team for not wearing his tie on the plane.
It's interesting, okay? There's the story, and then there's the story behind the story. And to me, the story behind the story is much more interesting.
Good.
What I do know about this situation is I've got a close personal friend who was a college roommate at Cal Berkeley with Ron Rivera. And everything that this fellow...
Who is the coach, of course, of the Panthers. So
yeah, Ron Rivera is the head coach of the Panthers, the guy who actually suspended. Who sat Cam down for that first play. So what I have been told about Ron Rivera is that he's a very fair guy, but that he believes that there is an undermining going on. And I don't think he's ever going to admit that to anybody. But there's really no secret that Cam is having an awful season. Mm. And it's not so much how he plays on the field, but it's how he plays for the press and just if you watch him, his body language is pitiful. And he's supposed to be a leader on that team. He's supposed to be a leader of men. And he's failing miserably in both of those areas. And what Ron Rivera did, in my opinion, I haven't heard this from his friend, but what Ron Rivera did, in my opinion, is it was sort of a preemptive shot to let Cam know that he's not above the team and that he will be brought into line. Now, Cam doesn't deal with that stuff very well, and I do know that that's the type of thing that would upset him. I think in the off season, they've had an awful season. Ron Rivera is a very good coach. He's a very good defensive-minded coach. He's got an incredibly talented quarterback in Cam Newton. But Cam's head is not right. And if I'm Jerry Richardson, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, what I'm doing is I'm pulling Cam aside, they're going to, I think in the next few weeks, you're going to start to see a, does Cam go or does Ron go type of argument. And I don't think it's been to that point yet. I think these are grown men. They obviously have differences, but I'm here to tell you that all the differences are Cam's fault. Cam's got to grow up.
So what's the take on it in the US? Because we're talking about the player that was voted the best player in the league last year. Has he just lost his way? Is that it? He's just got too big for his boots? And is that the scenario?
I think Brian, that last year, I mean, he's incredibly talented and he's big and he's strong and he's athletic and he's a good-looking man. And
we know him out here because he was out here with the Tigers, of course, wasn't he?
That's right. But yeah. See, I've always had problems with Cam, not personally, but as a quarterback and as a leader. Because the thing about that position is there's an incredible amount of work that has to go into it if you're going to be successful. And all the great ones work day and night to be the best they can. Tom Brady, Andrew Luck, Joe Montana did it, Steve Young, Troy Aikman, all those guys. Cam does not like to work, from what I'm told. And Cam is so incredibly talented that and I'm talking like generationally talented. Like the physical gifts that guy has, you don't see very often. And he was so good that he was able to carry his Auburn football team to a national championship, largely on just physical ability. You can't do that in the pros. Yet last year, with the way that they ran their offense, he was able to do it. And it was a perfect storm of the defense playing really well and a bunch of other stuff coming together for the Panthers last year that they were able to go 15-1. But defenses are smart, and defenses learn how to adapt to what a player does. And they look at what you do as a player, and they go, well, he does this well, he doesn't do that well. Let's make him do the thing he doesn't do well. And that's what defenses are doing this year to Cam Newton. And he hasn't evolved his game to a point where he can compensate for that and find other ways to beat people. And then he gets frustrated and he pouts. And most quarterbacks on the sideline should be, when they're on the sideline not playing, so when the offense is off the field and the defense is on, they should be rallying the troops, talking to the receivers, talking to everybody. Cam, if you look at Cam, every time they show Cam, and I don't watch him 24/7 during a game, but every time they show him, he's got the towel over his head and he's sitting typically by himself on the bench, and that is not what you want your quarterback to do.
Steve,
so they need to pull him aside in the offseason and say, look, pal, you've got some real potential to do great things, but you're going to have to whip yourself into shape. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Carolina.
Steve, the discipline of players in the game over there. Now, we've just seen the situation we've been discussing here with Jarman Impey, who's crashed into five cars, albeit at low speed, but still done it and been suspended for one game. In rugby league here, had that happened, that would have gone to an independent integrity body who would have determined the penalty for the player. That's what happens. What happens over there? Because I know, having been there and seen it, that the indiscretions are quite regular, particularly with the higher net worth that some of these blokes have got, particularly in the off-season. What would happen in the same situation with Jarman Impey over there? Would it be gone to an independent body or would the club decide it?
Well, I guess the first thing that what the clubs do, and they use this as kind of a cop-out, is they go, well, we're going to let the criminal investigation ensue. Mm. So if the police are called in, they'll kind of – what they'll do is – so they'll try to do their internal investigation typically. Mm. If it's a player who hasn't had a lot of history of screwing up and, you know, nobody died or nobody was – you know, there was not a lot of bodily injury done – they'll usually just go, oh, look at, you know, we're going to sit him down or we've had a conversation with him or he's going to go to a course or something like that. And they'll rule it in-house. If it's outside, there's a code of conduct that the players are required to adhere to. And if they don't, then it can go to the NFL. And the NFL has they've got sort of a body that looks at how they behave.
Yeah, a disciplinary body, yeah.
Thank you, a disciplinary body. Yeah. So it could go to the NFL, it can be done by the team, and it can also be done by the authorities. So it's similar to what happens here. So if it's a really bad thing and the guy's got a history, then the team may sit him down. But what you will see, and some coaches will tell you, I mean, somebody like Jimmy Johnson said, I will always be consistent with my players, and that is I will treat you all differently.
Well, that's a Kevin Bartlett rule of life. He's
at least he's on. Hey, Steve, just to finish up, in the history of the NFL, when has a quarterback beaten a coach when it's come down to he goes or I go?
Typically, the player is the one. You know, I would say probably 70% of the time, if it's a noteworthy player, teams are going to side with him because it's so difficult to find somebody who plays that position well. But if it's somebody like Bill Belichick or Bill Walsh or Vince Lombardi or guys like that, you might side with the coach. So, again, it comes down to the two parties involved. It comes down to a player's age. It comes down to, you know, what the player does in the community. I mean, there's so many different variables and different scenarios that are considered when teams make decisions about this.
It also comes down to the sanity of the owner comes into it somewhere as well, because he's the one who gets to make the final decision. Thanks for your time, Steve. Appreciate it.
Steve. Where are we at with the cricket, Kev? What are we thinking about the cricket?
Look, I'm enjoying the one days more because I reckon, as I mentioned earlier in the program, less of the dead overs in the one days. Now, it's gone from about 15 down to maybe 5 or 6 or 7, maybe in a bad game. Mm. That was all over last night, fairly early for me. Pretty much when Guptill went out last night, was all over and done with. So
have we lost it? I'll tell you one fascinating thing I did see overnight was that Kookaburra are now making the baggy green.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Albion
lost it. I'm not surprised, given what I know. I'm in that industry. I'm not surprised that they've been given it. Very well-respected Kookaburra. A disaster for Albion, but that's business. But I don't want to lose sight of what we discussed so vigorously as a public 3 weeks ago, that our cricket team had lost their way. And they are our flagship team in the country and our Australian cricket team. We cannot, you know, a win wallpapers over many cracks, is the old saying.
Yes, it does.
So, you know, and we had...
The test series starting at the Gabba next week will sort out where we're at, to
But
be
where
honest.
Are they? Where are they at?
Where are Pakistan at? Oh, they're a good test side.
Right. Have they? Yeah. When are they last?
Well, they haven't
here?
Played home for, what, since Adam was
no,
a boy.
No, but they've also struggled out here, haven't they?
Well, traditionally they do, but they're quite a good side, the Pakistani side. And I'm not sure that we're that good, and I'm not sure. I imagine we'll go on with the same 11. I don't think Marsh will be recalled to the side.
No.
Or the other Marsh will be fit with his finger. So I think we'll see Renshaw play, and I think we'll see Maddinson and Hanscom in there. So
does Cricket Australia have an obligation to let the Australian public know what their plan is, what their plan for success of our Australian 11 is? Should they be...
You mean the selectors need to tell us what they're doing?
Should they be saying that? Because I always remember reading back over when South Africa... That doesn't mean they shouldn't. It's the old definition of insanity, that. Yes. Doing the same thing over expecting a different result.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I always remember when South Africa played out here under Graham Smith and they beat us here in that series out here. They planned to do that for 3 years. When we got beaten in the Ashes by the English over there after they couldn't beat us here, they'd planned that for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. What is our plan? What is our key monumental things that we need to win?
We're going to have all these really good young fast bowlers, but we're not going to play them in the tests. We're just going to have them there. They're just going to circulate around the satellite circuits of cricket. You know what would make a bold statement about Australian cricket's future? Put Pat Cummins in the test side for the Gabba test.
If he's ready to play.
What have you... The last couple of nights we've seen him play... One day internationals, is he ready to play? When are we going to know if we don't let him play?
No, that's right. I mean, the
long
other night we
form of the
play.
Game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested in him. Merv Hughes said it once. He said it's not very hard to just pick the best players. And that's true, but don't you have to take some cyclical approach to what are we trying to play for? Because to me, the pinnacle is the Ashes.
I think we have. I reckon this last move
did. That's the only move.
It's
taken us 3 years to get there, hasn't it?
Yeah, but... You also, and you would know this from your days at St Kilda, that there's also a have to perform now to a certain standard or else you lose the support of the public and people lose interest in you as an entity because you are losing. So you have to bring Adam Voges in and put him in the side because he will make runs now.
Oh.
He's not going to make runs for you in 2019.
Yeah.
Renshaw will hopefully. Hanscom will hopefully. But he's not. But he needed to be there then and there because... We had big holes to fill.
No, and that's right. And there are certain times in your team's evolution that you do need to continue with some experience for a period. I remember at St Kilda we dragged Stephen Powell. Not dragged. We recruited Stephen Powell from Melbourne to fulfil a specific
role.
He'd
been at the Doggies before that.
Yeah, and we gave him a 3-year deal when Melbourne, I think, would only give him a 1. But we needed someone that could give a chop out and also teach... Ball, Del Santo, Montagna, and all these kids coming through about what it meant to be a really good player. I think Powell had even played in the grand final at Melbourne. We didn't in our wildest dreams believe that he'd be as good a player as he was. He was fantastic for St Kilda, Stephen Powell. Because he was a warrior, you know, and that's what you wanted. But he taught.
He was a warrior when he was playing on the sup list at the
Bulldogs. Yeah, and people talk about, and I do talk about, you know, the evolution of that team and why Rewalt and all those other players have been so good. It's because they had Hamill and Gehrig and Powell, who was central to that, taught them great values.
Yep.
So the Australian cricket team is no different. They need to maintain that stability because you look at who they threw in and who they've lost. I mean, they've had a huge amount of experience to go out. But that doesn't get away from a plan. I still think as a country, as a nation, we need to see a plan. I'd love to see them come out and say, here it is.
Is the plan not been a spoke put in the, you know, in the wheel because Marsh hasn't worked? Because
yeah, possibly.
But both the Marshes, when tried,
well,
haven't
had
worked.
A lot of injuries, haven't they?
But more Mitchell not doing what everyone thought he had the potential to do, but has never really done. I know he was sensational last night, but that's hit and giggle. It's not test cricket.
Mm.
But the fact that he hasn't been able to dominate with the bat or the ball in that role, in that pivotal role of the Australian all-rounder, to the point now where we don't have one in the team.
So the other interesting thing, you talk about Pat Cummings, and we all think he's got huge talent. And we know, you know, James Pattinson's also had a lot of talent. And all these players that fast bowlers tend to have these injuries and back problems and all these ailments. I mean, just on the SMS says Pat Cummings hasn't played a four-day game for New South Wales since 2011.
Yeah, well, injury stroke, don't pick him.
Yeah, that's right.
We never pick him. Pick him in one.
Yeah, which is interesting. But
let him play one.
I didn't see how he bowled the other night, but if he's the future and I know where Pattinson is, we need to start playing. The other thing is Peter Siddle's just been gone, has he? Is he gone?
Well, he had the injury with the test, and his pace dropped, and then he was left out of the side because he did have the injury. Yeah. So I don't know.
All I hope is that now the Australian selectors and whoever they are gets a role, give some credibility back to the team by making it clear to the Australian public that their national team has a plan to be the best team it possibly can be.
I still feel sorry for Minnie and Ferguson because I think they got caught in that cycle. Unfortunately, they were in the sort of the dishwasher cycle.
They'll have one though. They'll have one to show the grandkids.
Oh yeah, but
one's better than none. I wouldn't mind one.
Yeah,
I'd love one.
Yeah, no, I'd love one too. When you put it in those terms, Brian, it actually makes
sense. Yeah, it does make sense. Yeah. They'll take the one. They might have been grumpy, but
Waldron
they got it.
Waldron and Hillier are available for the Gabba test if needed. Thank you, Brian.